I'm Henry Lin, and welcome to Better World. Better World is an exploration of badass people doing really cool things. The more we know about this world, the better we can do in changing it. I'm here today with Ryan. Ryan has decided that fossil fuels just absolutely fucking suck. I don't disagree. It is largely understood that they are the largest contributor to a number of challenges in our ecosystem, including the production of plastics, as well as pollution of some of our most treasured ecosystems, as well as really just fucking up the air. So, Ryan, why don't you tell us a little bit about Ether, your company, and how you guys are helping to make the world a little bit of a better place through hydrocarbon fuel?
Absolutely. So thanks for having me, first and foremost.
Thanks for being on, you know?
Oh, no, it's my pleasure. It really is. I love telling our story. You know, getting our mission out into the world is part of my job. So I think really to start, to give you some perspective into, you know, kind of how we look at the problem that we're solving, how we look at the notion of conscious consumerism, even conscious luxury, you have to understand kind of one of our underlying beliefs. And that is, you know, the future in and of itself at this point is a luxury. So in fact, we're going to market with a product that is not necessarily
with hydrocarbon fuel. Not with them.
Not what you would think. You know, and really the way we describe ourselves, we're a carbon-based material company. We create a extremely high purity hydrocarbon fuel that can be used for a litany of reasons. And one of these particular use cases and one that is very high value is diamonds. You know, a diamond is just crystalline carbon. And today they're produced, you know, by digging them out of the ground or by pumping fossil fuels into CVD diamond reactors or other carbon sources into high pressure, high temperature reactors to create them in a laboratory environment. You know, we had the epiphany a couple of years back now. What if instead of using fossil fuel sources for our carbon, we were able to reverse some of the damage, you know, historical damage that goes back 100 years on the part of the fossil fuel industry, on the part of the diamond trade, grab the carbon that they've put out into our atmosphere, recollect it, purify it, and transform it into something beautiful, you know, type 2A gem diamonds. So,
dun, 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 dun. Take that, Rex Tillerson, you bastard.
So that's what we've been working on for the last year and a half, really just getting the science behind the process, getting the technology where it needed to be so that we could get into production and scale quickly. And
so just to review, you guys create what is ostensibly a hydrocarbon fuel liquid that comes from the air. So you have a machine and a process that creates the fuel, and then that fuel is pressurized and compressed to create diamonds. Can you tell us a little bit more specifically about how the process goes without getting into anything too proprietary?
Sure thing. So first step is pulling the carbon out of the air. And right now you've got a handful of direct carbon or direct air capture technologies that pull carbon out of the air in one way or the other. We are leveraging a technology stack that uses what's called amine filtration. And what that does, we basically pump air through a machine and there's a filter substrate inside. That filter substrate will bond chemically with carbon dioxide that's present in our air. Today, we have a little over 400 parts per million CO2 concentration, which is higher than ever before in human history. And what we're able to do is directly pull that out of the air. You close that box up with the filter inside of it. You pull a vacuum, get rid of everything that's inside there. And then you heat up that filter to 100°C and the bond between the carbon dioxide and the filter breaks and it releases the CO2 as well as some other, we'll call them less savory characters on the elemental chart that come along with it. So what we end up getting out of that is about 70% pure CO2. So there's some stuff that would be toxic to the diamond growing process we have to get rid of. So it goes through further purification. That's where some of the secret sauce lies. So I won't get too much into that. But once we've purified it, we can actually raise that purity up into the high 90s. Then we transform CO2 into our hydrocarbon through a process called methanation. So essentially what we're doing is introducing hydrogen into the mix in the presence of heat, a little bit of pressure, and a special reagent that's designed to allow the hydrogen to cut in on the dance. So the hydrogen butts in on that dance, starts self-assembling into small chain hydrocarbons, CH4 in this case, and the oxygen that was part of the CO2 vents off to the atmosphere. So what we're left at the end of the day is a high purity CH4 with purity levels in, you know, in the 99% range. We put that through, you know, one or two additional passes of, you know, basically direct filtration, but specialized filters to grab those last little bits and raise the purity level up to what's considered ultra pure. So 99.999% purity. So now it's essentially pure CH4. And this is the world's only ultra high purity, sustainably derived methane. So we can use that to go and create diamonds that are now essentially made from thin air. That's not the only use case. However, the carbon to value numbers, if you look at it, it's really just it's a fantastic go-to-market strategy because diamonds are very expensive. They're valuable. We're taking something, you know, that cost us not a whole lot of money and turning it into something that is extremely valuable. So just to put things in perspective, you know, right now I think spot pricing for a gram of gold is something like $50. If you scale it out by weight, diamonds are 33 times more valuable than gold.
That's some serious value.
Right. And it gives us an opportunity to funnel that money back into the business as we're scaling basically through different industries. There are other applications where you want that ultra high purity methane. And as those industries go green and look to forego their reliance on fossil fuels, they need to have sustainable alternatives lined up. Right. That's where we come in.
So one of the applications that you guys have is diamonds, of course, but you're starting to list off some of the other applications that you have, both as a resource, as a supply, you know, a thing or a product, and as a fuel, and as a byproduct, right? Because I believe in pre-production, we were discussing the fact that you create a basalt as the byproduct, which also becomes a carbon sink. And allows for the sequestration of even more carbon. So can you tell us a little bit about some of your fuels, additional fuels, products, and byproducts?
So yeah, so to clarify, basalts are not a byproduct of our process. They are a tool that we utilize to increase our net environmental impact. So you can actually take CO2 from that first step and inject it into basalt formations underground, and it will actually chemically bond with that in a very strong way, and it buries it under the ground permanently. So it's a great methodology for sequestration. You know, we are definitely not the only people in the world who are looking at that as an opportunity to permanently sequester. But when you look at it side by side, you could put it under the ground, or you could put it on your finger, and we think that the latter is a better opportunity, not only because, you know, it's something that you get to see every day. It's beautiful, but it's a talking point. It's something that can spur conversation with friends and family. Right now, this is something that we as a society really need to rally behind together. We're big believers that, you know, being able to kind of go and put this into something like a diamond is something that is really, it's transformational. This is the first diamond that has a net positive impact on the world. We're talking about a product category that historically for 100 plus years has been bad for not only people, but the planet as well. I mean, a lot of people are familiar with blood diamonds. You know, you've seen the Leonardo DiCaprio movie.
One of the greatest films of all time. Black of my brew.
I've had many a conversation about that movie, and it's a merit from a cinematic perspective. I love the movie, but at the end of the day, it doesn't touch on any of the environmental impact. And that's something that most people aren't aware of, you know, in terms of how much water is consumed to create diamonds by pulling them out of the ground. It's an extremely wasteful process. You've got heavy industrial equipment, dump trucks, cranes. You're doing a terrible amount of damage to pull these little rocks out. It's kind of interesting, but the average amount of soil that you have to permanently remove from the earth to find a single carat of diamond is enough to fill the average American living room. So we're talking about, if you had imagined the size of your living room full of dirt, you excavate all of that out of the ground, sift through it, you're left with a single 1 carat diamond after cutting and polishing.
Is my ex-girlfriend in the room? Possibly. We don't know. These jokes are too terrible. It also seems that a diamond is an interesting choice from a luxury perspective. So, you know, without looking into too many more of the products, because I, of course, want to go deep on the hydrocarbon fuel side and how you take on fossil fuels and what you think the fossil fuel industry will do or how it will die. the choice of diamonds and in creating a brand, a D2C brand and a D2C company is interesting because you're attaching something that is sustainable in a movement to something that is luxury. And it's almost inverse marketing. You're quietly saving the big thunder stealer for later. Can you tell us a little bit about your decision to go with the diamond side first?
Sure. Well, I mean, it's the Tesla methodology. You know, when Elon Musk took over at Tesla, the first thing they did was really lean into the Roadster, and it was this high performance vehicle. It was expensive. It wasn't meant for the masses, and they did that to build some clout with consumers so that they could take the money from that and spin it into a slightly more affordable car, Model S. And they leaned into that so that they could take the money from that and lean into or create an even more affordable car that is potentially for the masses in the Model 3. So for us, it was kind of a no-brainer. My co-founder and I come from the luxury jewelry space. Once upon a time, we met while working at David Yurman. So we're sitting in a small room in Tribeca. We bonded over, you know, our love for motorcycles, and really forged a friendship that stood the test of time. We separated. I left the jewelry industry. He went on to, you know, do really amazing things in that space. And I went down the path of entrepreneurship. And when I wanted to start this up, he was the first guy. I said, you know, I've got to call Dan, got to loop him in, let him know, you know, kind of what I'm thinking and have, you know, we can run with this. And it was in those very early days, we discussed how we would get out there. You know, I don't say that we're a diamond company, specifically because our aspirations are much greater than that. Really, you know, whether you want to call us a hydrocarbon company or a carbon tech company or a climate tech company, I think the nomenclature is, you know, probably all up for debate. But ultimately, what we're doing is turning this harmful pollution into something of value. And as I said, this high purity methane that we produce is the only such sustainably derived high purity methane in the world. That type of high purity methane is used for manufacturing consumer electronics. Every solar cell that's made in the world requires high purity methane. So it's really interesting in terms of how we can then approach these other leading edge, you know, industries and understand what we're doing in a way that's broader and much more expansive than just jewelry. Now, jewelry, don't get me wrong. I mean, we're talking about nearly a $90 billion global opportunity just for making diamonds. Now we can take excess diamond material, pulverize it, turn it into diamond powder or diamond dust, and use that for industrial cutting and polishing applications. That's a multi-billion dollar opportunity right there. Quantum computing, advanced medical research. It's quite amazing what diamond itself as this kind of super material is really able to do across a range of industries. But to your earlier point, the opportunity to create this ultra high purity sustainable fuel source is really exciting. Now, there are other companies out there who are, you know, developing air derived fuels.
Right.
What we're doing is a little bit more specialized than that. So we saw some white space. We had a chemistry in mind that we thought we would be able to go and attack. And, you know, it took some time, took a lot of blood, sweat, and tears to get it to work. And, you know, we're actually going into production very soon. By August of this summer, things should be up and running pretty nicely. So it's a very exciting time for us. And it's nascent still. We have tons of connections in the jewelry industry. And obviously that's another part of why we're going to market in that space first.
So it seems to me like the hydrocarbon, if you could get into it, the hydrocarbon fuel market is really, really big. There are people attacking it already. So many people vested in replacing fossil fuels, the fossil fuel industry so entrenched. A number of companies like Mango Materials invested in replacing plastics with harmful chemicals that are extracted from the air. They do it with methane extracted from the air. So with all of these different folks who are trying to combat the problem, where do you see the fossil fuel industry, ultimately getting, its death pill from?
So I don't know that it will get its death pill from anything we've seen yet today. And I think what we're likely to see is a convergence of sorts. It's funny. I don't know if you watch Billions, but, right now there's one of the themes of the current season is how a part of Axe Capital, Taylor Mason's group with inside the larger Axe Capital family is creating an impact fund. And part of what they've done is invested heavily into a fossil fuel company. And then they're going out and investing in companies that are developing really, really interesting tech solutions in the climate space, and using it as an opportunity to align interests. You know, really, the fossil fuel industry is, in a sense, a misnomer. You know, it's the energy industry that we really have to look at it. And so it includes solar, it includes wind, it includes any source of power that we rely on for society to function as it does today. So I don't think there'll be a single death pill. It's not going to come to fruition in that way. What we're going to see is a convergence of sorts, and we're already seeing it. And I think part of that is going to be spurred by the divestment of capital from traditional fossil fuels, and forcing fossil fuel companies to, you know, kind of understand this is 2020. We're directionally going somewhere that they may not be, and you'll end up seeing more collaborative efforts. And maybe it's the forever optimist inside of me who believes that that's the future we're headed towards. But I really do have to say, I think it's going to end up being something that is more of an evolution than, you know, complete destruction.
If you had your choice, you know, like money agnostic, you had all the money in the world. How would you solve the fossil fuel problem yourself with this company?
Well, if we're simply talking about the problem of relying on fossil fuels that come out of the ground for energy, the debate is, I think, very much still in play as to, you know, what our best opportunities are. If you've been paying attention, because of things happening this year due to the pandemic, we've had some interesting, call it swings in trends as to where we are sourcing our energy. Wind and solar have played a bigger part, not only here in the States, but in other countries as well. You know, record levels of power being generated and consumed coming from sustainable sources. That's not going to necessarily continue once things get back to normal, but it's as I said before, directionally, that's where we're headed. So if I had all the money in the world, and I always think of My Climate Journey, the podcast, Jason Jacobs, the founder and host of the podcast, always asks his guests, if you had, I think it's $100 million, or maybe it's $100 billion, it's more aspirational, what would you do to combat climate change? And really, that's the way I generally look at it when I'm having this conversation. It's, you know, what can we do to decarbonize? That's the big thing. You know, if we can continue to responsibly use fossil fuels to make up for gaps in our power requirements, you know, like fracking. Fracking is terrible. I'm not awful. A fan of fracking, but it's a transitional power source. So, you know, you can't just turn off all fossil fuels. I think we should be, coal is very clearly in the past, and I don't know why some people are still striving to keep coal alive. It might be pandering to, you know, certain areas of the country where coal has been traditionally produced. Appalachia has been, you know, really suffering since we've been phasing coal out. And, you know, I understand the desire to, you know, really hold on to that and really drive in a direction that creates jobs for people, puts people back to work. You know, great, hardworking people, but we can't be doing that by investing in old, you know, really dead technologies at this point. So I don't have an answer. I know this is a very long-winded non-answer, but it's going to be a collaborative effort, not only with the entrenched powers that be, but through different technologies. And I think wind and solar are becoming more and more viable. There's really interesting stuff well outside of that.
So this
really
is a mixed bag. This is a collection of all of the things creating, you know, the perfect storm that ultimately causes the tides to shift.
Yeah, well, we're still learning. We're still learning. So, you know, no one's really putting all of their eggs in one basket. We have to see how things adapt and scale. And frankly, even with direct air capture, the tech that we're using at the very, you know, top front of our process is still not really at any level of scale globally. You know, today it costs anywhere from just a few hundred to maybe $600 on a per ton basis. So just to put it in perspective, you know, if it costs $600 to pull a ton of CO2 out of the air, how many diamonds can you make? Well, set into a nice little solitaire ring, probably somewhere north of $8 million in revenue potential for D2C. That's partly why we're doing this. It's an extremely efficient from a revenue generation standpoint compared to our upfront costs. And it gives us the opportunity to you know, reinvest profits back into other environmental initiatives, other decarbonization initiatives. We're a B Corp, public benefit corporation, in the process of getting fully certified for B Corp status. And you know, our mission is to use our business as an economic engine for change.
This is a really, really fascinating and awesome conversation for six or seven different reasons, which is something that we rarely have on the show. And thank you for it. We're going to take a commercial break very, very briefly. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about the future of the company, where you see it growing, as well as what every single user can do at home to help change the world. This episode of Better World is brought to you by The Vintage Twin. Sam is one of the most favorite founders that I have and that we have on the show. And we are incredibly invested in helping shift the overarching problem in fashion, which is a consumption problem where we just have to consume new things all the fucking time. Recycle, reuse, resell is a big pillar of what we believe here at Better World. So we would like to encourage you guys to go shop at vintagetwin.com, where they have launched personal styling. But we also want to note that we did it. We took the personal styling challenge. We ordered a beautiful $80 sweatshirt. Myself and our social media manager, she kept the sweatshirt, even though I ordered it in my size, paid for it, and it was awesome. It was one of those vintage Miami ones with the sunset. And it was soft as fuck. So highly recommend the products. I have been to the warehouse. I've been on the sales floor. They do great work. VintageTwin.com. And if you are not buying vintage or resell, then at least make sure that you stay away as much as possible from fast fashion. Buy goods that are sustainable in that they last and you'll keep it for 30 years and try and buy less. So we are back with Ryan. I really have been harping on that same tune and have to get some better sponsors, you know, like a go-kart racing place, perhaps paintball, something a little bit fun that everybody gets behind. But you got to love Vintage Twin, right, Ryan?
I've got nothing bad to say about it.
Tough but fair, said the diamond guy. This is a really, really exciting time because, you know, here in COVID and here in protest America COVID, everybody's looking inward and thinking about what are some of the major shifts that they're going to make in their lives, or they're just really hoping to get back to fucking normal. And you've cornered the market on both sides. The people who want to get back to normal can get a better diamond. And the people who want to address the future can buy the future of diamonds. I happen to love a product market fit that fits everybody so nicely. Can you tell me a little bit about the jewelry line and how you anticipate growth there? How is it designed? How are you making it fit the market? What segment of the market are you going after? What does it look like? How does it feel? Why do the ladies and the men want to wear it and buy it?
Sure. Well, why do you ever want to wear a piece of jewelry? You know, for us, that's a very high level question that you can answer in a million different ways, but it ultimately comes down to the design of the piece. So design is something that's been integrated into what we're doing since day one. So, you know, even the name of what we're doing is meant to embody, you know, kind of our core values. Ether, A-E-T-H-E-R, is the air that the gods on Mount Olympus breathed. It's the fifth alchemical element for air. It's really, we're trying to capture that magic and turn it into physical form with our jewelry. So really, where are we going to be in the market? It's certainly fine fashion. So similar to your David Yurman's or your Tiffany's, it's a luxury product, but it's attainable. It's not terribly, terribly expensive. In terms of like price point, we're looking at something in the several hundred dollar range to get into it, as well as pieces all the way up to, you know, $29,000-$30,000. So definitely something that is, as I said, very heavily design driven. When we were at David Yurman, Dan and I, once upon a time, their motto was, you know, bold modern designs. And I think there's an element of that that's baked into what we're doing. A different aesthetic for sure. You know, we have our own look and feel that is, I think, unique to us. So really excited to see kind of how the consumer market embraces that, you know, because to your point, it's, you want to look good. Now you can look good and feel good about it. If you're getting a diamond that's produced otherwise,
a prolific font of really, really great slogans. I love the fact that you've practiced them all. You're just nailing them. It's like watching a figure skater. Please keep going because you shouldn't be stopped. You're on a roll. Let's go.
Yeah. So, you know, to my point, we're certainly a luxury line. I liken it to the automotive space. Tesla Motors is kind of the category defining brand in the electric vehicle space. Lab-grown diamonds, man-made diamonds, are actually on the same adoption curve. If you look at them side by side, they're remarkably similar. But this is a space that really doesn't have that leading brand yet, and that's what we hope to be. But at a more macro level, we're looking to usher in a massive change in the way this market behaves. It's really not been disrupted in a very long time. The biggest disruption in this industry was probably when the De Beers monopoly was broken apart. So that was a combination of different factors that led to that happening. I could talk about that for an hour straight. I will not do that. But what I will say is this. Today, in lab grown, you're not seeing the level of conscious consumerism that we would like to see. You have a lot of brands that were telling a lot of stories about how they are doing the right thing by the world. They're doing X, Y, and Z. Meanwhile, the whole time, they're still using fossil fuel ingredients to create their diamonds. And if they're pulling them out of the ground, it's even worse. So when we talk about, you know, kind of the big picture for us, it's not just having a D2C brand. It's almost the Swarovski model. You know, they make crystals that they sell to a slew of different brands, even in different industries. They partner with non-obvious companies. You know, you can find home goods products that have Swarovski crystals built into them, shoes, apparel, you name it. Why can't we do that with diamonds? You know, we're really looking to shake things up by selling our diamonds to everyone that wants to buy them. It's definitely something that we're trying to bleed transparency into everything that we do. So in terms of how we make it, what our footprint is, all of that is stuff that we're going to be quite open with consumers. There'll be competitive pricing with mine diamonds. Our diamonds are not as expensive to make. We can pass on some of those savings to our consumers. At the end of the day, it's not going to dramatically change it. It's not going to turn a $10,000 ring into a $1,000 ring, but there will be cost savings. And you know, we hope that that really allows us to go as far and wide with our product as possible. So it's not just the finished good jewelry that's important. It's the stones themselves.
It sounds a lot like you guys are targeting a more affluent demographic. And how do you anticipate creating products that have a more wide berth, or do you not? Do you anticipate creating multiple brands utilizing the diamonds? What's the direction you think you're going to go?
Yeah, it's a possibility. I mean, it's early days, so it's tough to say if we'll become a house of brands, but it's possible. What I'll say is this. I mentioned Tesla. Tesla is a luxury vehicle by every measure, but I don't know if you've ever been in one. They're quite nice, but they're not a Bugatti. They're not a Ferrari. They're not a Lamborghini. So there is still stratification within the luxury automotive category. And we think it's the same for jewelry. So is this purely for more affluent customers? I don't think so. You know, I don't think a $250 piece of jewelry is terribly aspirational for many people, but it's still something that is somewhat aspirational. So we're really trying to have certain entry-level price points that people can, you know, can afford with some savings potentially. And then, you know, larger spends like on bespoke jewelry, for instance, an engagement ring. If you came to us and said, you know, I'm really interested in buying an Ether engagement ring. Well, we have world-class designers that are willing to sit down and work with you to create something that's so finely tuned for who you are and capture your essence in a way that makes that piece something that you'll treasure for the rest of your life. And yes, that can be quite a bit more expensive depending on what size stone. But, you know, we've really started kind of branching out already. We have our first brand partnership to be announced publicly a little bit later this year with a company. No, thank you. Thank you. This company has great reach and they have extremely affordable products for consumers. They sell tens of thousands of units a year and their price points, you know, for some of their products start at $20 and scale up from there. So, you know, there'll be smaller diamonds, but diamonds nonetheless.
Perfect. Okay. Yeah. So it's diamonds for everybody. Let's go into some of the things that the folks at home can do to make the world better. And you had mentioned earlier that really the only sustainable option is this option in the diamond space because the lab grown do consume a tremendous amount of resources. They put more carbon back into the atmosphere, and your regular mining process of diamonds, woof, you just won't even go in there. What would you say is, you know, the one or two adjacent behaviors to the diamond portion of this industry before we get to the fossil fuel side that you would want to recommend to the listener? What are the changes that you think they should make coincide with this? Is it perhaps looking at more sustainable jewelry and other sustainable materials? We looked at Futura jewelry and ecological gold that does not release mercury into the water streams and is much better for the planet. But what are some of the other things that you think the user can do in not just in more mindful and sustainable consumption of diamonds and jewelry and materials? What do you think?
So there's a couple ways I'll answer this. one thing that's really important to stress is really how detrimental diamond mining is to local ecologies all over the world. If I asked you to guess how many gallons of water are consumed by the diamond mining companies every year, what would your guess be?
Gallons of water consumed in areas where they really need water, no less, correct?
Some of them, yes, not all of them. So, I won't characterize it as that, but just in general, if you had to put a number on it, and this number often surprises people. So I'm curious what you think in terms of just pure gallons, how much water consumption is the diamond industry, the mining industry?
It's got to be a few hundred million, if not a billion, right? It's got to be something absurd.
19 billion gallons of water a year.
Jesus.
19 billion gallons of water a year. So, really one thing that I can't stress enough, it goes well beyond the water consumption. This is, generally speaking, permanent destruction when you establish a diamond mine. It's not like you're ever going to backfill these mines. It just ends up putting pockmarks all over the surface of the earth. So one of the things you can do, if you're not going to buy a diamond from me, still buy lab grown. Lab grown diamonds are still a step in the right direction. So I would also recommend looking for B Corps, look for companies that have a social impact element to their business model so that, they can continue to strive to achieve, a better future. I think beyond that, Fairmined Gold is also something that I'm very big on. And this is something that really touches on the human rights components.
Yes, as we said, Bob at Futura, we did an episode with him and Fairmined Gold is one of the best innovations in the jewelry industry, next to you guys, episode 47, people. Other than those, please keep going.
So those are some layups, but yes, Fairmined Gold is actually what we use for all of our pieces. So it's definitely, I think, not quite a standard, but should be a standard. So I would recommend any listeners who are going out looking
for it. It's definitely not quite a widespread standard. It was one of the struggles Bob was talking about. And he was saying, that 37% of mercury emissions on Earth are caused by small gold mines, getting my materials crossed. And that's a disproportionately large number. That's a scary number. And it's scary to think how much, methane, how much mercury, how much really, really bad stuff we just put back into the ecosystem at large.
Right. So, for everything we can do as a company, we still have to find groups to work with, standards to abide by. Right now there is an effort within the diamond trade itself to create standards around sustainability in particular. That's something that we're contributing towards and really working hard to help kind of usher in, just a new way of thinking in this space. And I have to say, it's one of those industries that it's kind of run by the old boys club. You've got the old guard who are still around, have been in positions of power within this industry for a very long time. And now finally you're starting to get like a groundswell of younger, future forward professionals who are coming in and stepping into these leadership roles, and I think that's going to bode really well for this market. But it's the number one piece of advice I always have is just don't rush into consumerism for consumerism's sake. You can do it with a conscience, and it's something that we're seeing in fashion. What we're doing is a hop, skip, and a jump away from fashion. So they're very close, but they're also very different. And together these are two industries that can have a profound impact on the, not only the global economy, but what we're doing with respect to our environmental efforts. And I think it's the future we're headed towards.
I agree completely. To add to that, let's talk about the hydrocarbon fuel side. How can we help move this behemoth industry, not just through, of course, our voting, which I'll suggest, and being very, very mindful of our representatives, senators, and presidents, and other related government officials that we vote into office who will help us move this needle with Green New Deals and other legislation. But what are some of the, you know, what are the basics? Who can we call? Who can we email? How do we get behind this? How do we request that, you know, car manufacturers make this a priority?
Well, I mean, car manufacturers, that's a tough ask. And I think the auto industry, you know, has some really entrenched interests that don't necessarily align with, right, with some of the goals that we have as a company have, and other companies that are working in the climate space. With that said, I'm a firm believer that capitalism does have its benefits, you know, and the private sector can have a major impact without the need for legislation. I am a huge supporter of the Green New Deal and efforts that drive us towards, you know, a future in which we're reliant on cleaner, more responsible power sources. You know, power and reliable power is what enabled American society to, you know, to flourish and become, you know, what it is today. The first world is only what it is because largely of this ability to have reliable power. And I think as we start to look at that, you know, through the lens of how it impacts consumers in their day to day, how often do you go out, you know, walk out of your front door, at least maybe in the pre-quarantine era, and start thinking about your carbon footprint. Most consumers have no idea what their carbon footprint is. So, you know, what we can do as a company is only going to go so far, and hopefully we can make a lot of money so we can take some of that money and put it back into, in, you know, these various environmental initiatives that we're looking to fund. But at the same time, you know, consumer purchasing decisions are going to drive the biggest impact. Vote with your dollars. You know, support companies that are making sure their supply chains are responsible. For us, you know, we have this specialty gas that we produce. This ultra high purity methane can be used for the production of solar cells, as I mentioned before. That's a great alignment, if you ask me. But the solar companies aren't doing it. You know, the manufacturers really haven't looked in that direction. Methane is so cheap today. So increasing their COGS by taking an even more responsible approach to how they build their products is not an easy pill to swallow. So it's something that has to phase in. And ultimately, I think driving demand up from, you know, businesses and consumers who are buying those types of products and products that are impacted, you know, by these types of global supply chains is going to be really important.
This has been incredibly informative, Ryan. Thank you very much for being on the show. Thank you for all of your work. And I would like to get some diamonds off you, my guy.
Well, I told you we're going to be in production in August, so let's make it happen.
Let's go. Thank you again. This has been another episode of Better World. And tune in again to hear how you can make the world a better place. And by the way, go get some diamonds.